What three words of wisdom do you turn to when you need grounding?
The first one would be trust, you know, trusting yourself and trusting, you know, where you're at that point in time, what your instincts are saying. I do think creativity is still in there. And
I love that.
That to me is, you know, whether that's the paintings that you could actually get to doing or the writing that you could get to doing during that time that was hard. I felt like it was an outlet I really needed. And love. It's cliche, but I'm so grateful for my partner who, you know, slept beside me on the most uncomfortable hospital bed mattress every night for weeks on end when I was in hospital. I really think he's the reason I'm here.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Purpose Pivot in partnership with MarketScale. Today, I'm excited to have you join me with my special guest, Billie Whitehouse. Her and I have known each other through social media and mutual connections for numerous years now. And as life does, something has brought us closer together. And I'm so excited that she has agreed to spend this time to sit with us to have a conversation about some things that are going on in life and the learnings that she's had from that. So Billie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Melissa. It's really nice to be here.
Yeah, so there's so much we're going to dig into in our conversation today, but I'm going to start with how I first found you through social media and mutual contacts with your company Wearable X and the amazing accomplishments that you've been able to achieve with this organization that you've created. Number one, Business Insider also naming you one of the 30 most important 30 under 30. You've also been named one of the most 100 most creative people by Fast Company, which is no easy feat. So I want to start in digging into some of that so the audience can get to know you a little bit better. So can you tell us about Wearable X, why you founded it, what you're passionate about in terms of the company, and just recent updates that you can share.
Oh, thank you. So yes, let me introduce Wearable X. Wearable X was founded in 2013, so quite a long time ago now.
Yes, that overnight success that happened in 2013.
Yeah. And we really believe in building wearable technologies that help us live well. And how that's manifested for Wearable X is building in electronics and technologies that can sense and understand the body's movement into apparel. And it not only senses and understands your movement, but it also can provide feedback with haptic vibration on the body. What I always believed about the wearable technology industry is often the data is not enough, and that we need to have this real-time impact to understand what's actually going on with our body. That isn't actually how the company started, though. We had quite a winding journey. We started off the back of creating a marketing campaign for Durex, the condom company, where we made vibrating underpants for couples in long distance relationships.
Why did I not realize this fun fact? But this is quite the pivot already.
It's quite the pivot already. With the baseline always being, you know, the power of physical touch, and how we can transfer touch through our pieces of apparel that we wear. It started with intimacy and a very successful campaign. We won a Cannes Lion for that campaign many, many years
ago.
As
you should have.
And then off the back of that, we kept iterating the technology and we kept pivoting the technology with the goal of, you know, how do you design for humans at the center of the human experience? So we made a jacket that guides you using haptic feedback. So instead of having to stare down at your map, you can actually put your phone away and see the outside world and have the jacket tap you on the shoulder when to turn left, when to turn right. You know, double time when you arrive. We even then moved it into the entertainment space, and we built a fan jersey that connects you to live sports data so that you can feel the sensations of your favorite team live as you're watching the game. Imagine things like heartbeat, like gugum, 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 and feeling that in your chest, or chills down the spine, or that celebration of adrenaline when you score a goal. And then we really, delve deeper into this area of wellness, understanding how the body works, how we could measure how the body works, and then providing that same haptic feedback, which started with yoga and has moved into everything from physical therapy to supporting lower back pain. So it has been a wild and wonderful journey with, haptic apparel really at the core.
I love that. I mean, there's so many to dig into and like so many people I know that could benefit from this. What are some of the things that you kind of have learned throughout these years of development, and tying it to the adjacency that your brand lives within well-being? And I, especially now I think living in this hybrid world where we're not moving as much and, you're not going into the office every day and you're probably working from home. Like, have you noticed more of a need for this as well?
Most certainly. The pandemic was definitely a peak time for our products. One of our products is called Nadi X, and this is a yoga product that measures your posture and guides you how to move into each one of the poses. So essentially, during the pandemic, when we weren't going to yoga classes and we weren't going to Pilates studio, this really was the product you could use at home so that you could practice with the guidance of the teacher, but without having to have that physical adjustment. There's a wonderful quote that says that sitting is the new smoking. And I think it's very true.
I
And we're
mean,
all
it's,
guilty.
I agree.
We're all guilty of it. So just after the pandemic, we actually ran a pilot study to validate that our product could be used for those suffering from lower back pain, which it's an extraordinary amount of people who do suffer from lower back pain. It's something like 80% of America. And I think this is in part because of this epidemic of sitting for so long during the day. And with that, we actually were able to validate that those who practiced several poses with our product 3 times a day actually saw a decrease in lower back pain. We used the Oswestry pain scale, and ultimately we saw some patients go from a ridiculous amount of pain in week one to less, an 80% decrease over the 3 week period.
That's incredible. I definitely don't know why I don't have this in my life right now. So I'm going to order. Probably for myself, my husband. I can think of a few people holiday gifts are taken care of. But tell us a little bit about your background. Like, how did you step into this? I mean, obviously it's an interesting start with Durex to your transition, but how did you get started into this? What was your academic background, and how do you, what you bring to the table to the company?
Thank you. Going back always feels like looking into a crystal ball, even.
Oh, I feel like that when somebody says, like, can I see your ID to make sure you're old enough? I'm like, yes, you can.
That's also a compliment. Beautiful. The goal here was always to ask people to pay attention to what their body is telling them. Listen to your body, understand what the communication is saying to you. And it's a lesson I continue to learn. But my background led to this because I'm a trained fashion designer, actually. And I studied in Australia, and then I did a master's program in Italy. Best year of my life. So wonderful. I think they asked me to do, what I would normally achieve in 3 months, they asked us to do over a year. They want you to slow it down. They want you to
I love
really
that.
enjoy the task, sort of pull it to pieces, build it back up. There's something so lovely about that slowness that is encouraged as part of that program. And then I went back to Australia and worked in the family business for quite some time. My mum runs a design university, and inside that, you sort of see all of the opportunities that are coming to the students and are building in the industry. And I got excited about a few key areas, one of which was wearable technology. The others were inside sort of 3D printing or mass customization. And I really delved into this area of what we could potentially do in the wearable space. And then, believe it or not, the advertising agency came to me and said it was 6 months earlier, and they said, we've got this idea, we want to do a viral campaign. And that to me always says, I don't know if I trust you.
I know, yeah. Is it authentic? Is it, is it on brand for me?
Exactly. And then they came back, 3 months later and said, you've got 3 months to do this. We've got a team to help you. We think we should do it now. Can you do it? And I was so excitable. I mean, I think I was 25. So of course you're excitable. So I dived in. In fact, I handmade a lot of those first pairs of underwear. I remember having purple stained fingers because I even hand dyed all the lace myself.
Oh, wow. And then the things you do in the beginning.
Oh, the things you do. And I was hand stitching all of the, like, basically to secure the haptic motors in, we would use neoprene, and I would hand stitch around the neoprene to get the haptic motors into the pants. And then eventually I found a manufacturer that would help me, which was very handy and needed. When we were going from 10 units to 400 units, you do need that support.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's really how this started, was a desire to get your hands dirty, to build from scratch, to build something that I didn't think existed yet. I'd had this idea, and I had an entrepreneurial partner when I was 24, and I had told him that I wanted to build this product called Knickers in the Knot, Tie Them in the Right Spot. And he was like, oh, that's a great idea. Like, but how would you do it? And I didn't really have the execution path yet. And I wasn't thinking about electronics. I was thinking more about sort of just knickers with underwear, like knickers with knots in them, and thought it was kind of entertaining. And then it turned into a partnership with a software company, Sneepo, where they were able to help build the software, and I was able to help secure the electronics into the apparel and design the apparel. And that is how Wearable X was formed.
I love this journey of yours, and it continues, and I think what you describe is so evident in the product itself, because you have that tech savviness, but there's this subtle femininity to it, which is your fashion designer side coming out, I think. And so not all companies have that combination, especially from the one person, the founder. So that's pretty special. I'm also going to share the fun fact that Forbes once compared you to Steve Jobs and Jerry Seinfeld. Because of your anthropologic look at human-centric design. That's a huge compliment. How did you feel when you were deemed that?
I just presented at the Bright Conference at Columbia University. And I remember leaving that stage feeling like, oh, I nailed it, which I don't often get when I have actually done a presentation. But it was this combination of entertaining and a look at the science, or a look at the human behavior. And it was actually off the back of that presentation that article came out. So it was someone in the audience that saw that presentation. And I think when you get it right. And it's forever experimentation, whether that's the way you present, or the way you build products, or the way that you interact in the world. For me, that it's all an experiment. And for that particular experiment, it went well that day. I don't necessarily, I don't always love being compared to sort of, very public male figures who've done it all before for a few reasons. Mostly you want to be able to define your own path.
Of course.
And not feel like, there's this ceiling above you that you have to either break through, or that's there, to guide you. You sort of just want to think, oh, but I'm trying to do it a little differently. At the time, though, I was delightfully complimented.
It is a compliment. At least they are two really, admirable folks. So, and that's a good juxtaposition to be compared to the two of them, but in your own unique way, because as you're saying, you're creating your own path for Billy Whitehouse yourself. Well, you've accomplished so much since 2013, and with the evolution of your brand and all the partnerships. You have some amazing partnerships as well with well-known wellness brands. And how do you approach that? What kind of filter do you use to decide, what athleisure brands you think make sense for you to partner with? Is it looking at their community, their promise? How do you go about that process?
It's a great question. It's almost, I think I go about it the opposite way. It's like, what doesn't work about this particular company? And sometimes that takes some time to figure out. You sort of have to have a look under the hood sometimes to realize if it's not the right partnership. But you learn just as much from the ones that don't work as you do from the ones that do work. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I've worked on so many products that haven't made it to market. And I think you learn sometimes more from those products that don't make it than you do from the ones that do. You learn a lot from the ones that do too. The deciding factors, this is going to sound probably a little too corporate, but a decision matrix is always helpful.
I mean, this is business, so it's,
And in that, you can, you know, include whatever values and necessary to determine if it's the right partnership. I've worked with a couple of companies, some of whom, you know, truly, you know, the values really aligned. We didn't necessarily have the right financial relationship, but the values really aligned. And so you've got to have a balance between, you know, do your values align? Is there the right financial incentive? Is the product something you believe in and that you think the world is ready for? And is there a path to continued success? That's sort of the baseline of that decision matrix. I've certainly had experiences with companies where you very quickly realize that your morals and values aren't the same. And it's a great feeling when you can get out of those partnerships. I think it's like a huge weight that is lifted, but it's not always easy to do, especially when there's, you know, financial gain to be had. But ultimately, sure. I think you learn quickly if the partnership's going to work or not.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. I get it. I mean, they're going to have different some are longer tail halo effect value. And so it's not about the dollar today, but the brand positioning and alignment and new audiences, and other times it's more immediate. So it's good to have a holistic strategic lens on that, and kind of piecing that matrix all together, as you mentioned. So I'm going to pivot the conversation a little bit, because as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we know of each other through work. You know what I've done in my organization. I know what you've been doing with Wearable X, and, you know, watching your progress. But life took a little bit of a different turn, you know, or zigzag, we're calling it, right? Because life doesn't move in one straight line for you. And a couple months ago, you made the courageous decision to be more public about your journey. I think also in hopes that it helps others, right? Because you realize when you go through certain journeys, you're not the only one who goes through those things. And you and I were written in the same article by Jane Hansen in Forbes, A Roadmap for Women Leading Through Personal Health Crisis. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that. And, you know, you broke your silence, but not everybody might have read that article yet. So I know, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about your experience and, you know, how that changed your perspective as a founder, and the way in which you approach things, and some of the things you talked about are vulnerability and intuition, very aligned with some of the things that I experience and I talk about in my book.
Yeah. So in 2023, I was 20 weeks pregnant, and I thought I was genuinely starting a new chapter. I don't think I realized what chapter that was at the time. Mm-hmm. I had been having quite considerable pain. And it's not that I think I was ignoring it. I certainly addressed it by, you know, going to the doctors, asking the right questions, asking if I needed things like a colonoscopy. And the general response was, you know, if you're pregnant, then this is normal. This is fine. You know, soldier on. Mm-hmm. A million women have done this before you. And so I did. And, you know, I would go through different levels of pain. Sometimes I couldn't leave the house, and sometimes I was more physically able and, you know, even able to travel in that last month before officially being diagnosed. I then, you know, couldn't keep down food for many weeks and wasn't able to go to the bathroom, and went back to hospital and got sent home, and then went back to hospital again, and they did not know what to do. And so they insisted on several tests, of which they then found a tumor in my transverse colon, and basically said, you know, we have to do surgery, and if we don't, you will die. Hearing that is quite terrifying.
Yeah, scary.
It's earth-shattering, I think, at the time, especially when you're growing another life in you. And mm-hmm. they've sort of said that it's lower risk for the baby. They think the baby will survive, but it's not no risk. And had the surgery, you know, takes them some time to do the biopsies and get you the results, and made it through the first 6 days of post-surgery where the baby made it, and then the baby passed away. And I think, having had the sort of trauma of the surgery and then this happening, I was quite broken, actually.
Yeah.
I really did take quite some time to rebuild after this moment. I then officially got the diagnosis the day before my birthday, where strange birthday present to be told that you have cancer, and then went through, 6 months worth of chemo and a reversal surgery. It was a very traumatic time, and I think the realities of going through something not dissimilar to what you went through that is so physically taxing. Both from the surgery standpoint and as well as the chemotherapy standpoint, while also trying to, maintain a business has many challenges, that is for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't even, it's a lot. It's a, you know, it's so much to go through. And it, I could imagine it, you know, in that pause, change your perspective about so many things, you know.
So many things. I guess there's a few things I haven't spoken out about yet that I think you will probably be able to resonate with. It was really interesting to me the people who were able to show up and the people who weren't.
Oh yeah.
And I don't, there's no blame and there's no sort of anger. I don't bring it up because of that. It was just some people have this ability to let you be in your sadness and let you be in your pain and can witness it and not ask you to be anything else.
Sure.
Whereas other people really want you to be okay, and they really want you to be who you were, and they really want you to be, the person that they are friends with. And in that time, I just wasn't able to. And I found that the friends and the family that I could be closest with were the ones who weren't asking me to be anything in particular. They were just allowing me to have that moment of pain that I was in.
Yeah, I think I hear what you're saying because I think our many people's automatic response is I'm gonna fix it for you. I'm gonna, you know, and that's their own discomfort being projected, right? Instead of kind of receiving where you're at and being able to ask the question, what do you need from me now? And I definitely have learned to be better about that after going through, you know, there's different stages of life you go through. Before I was pregnant, I never knew to ask somebody who was pregnant, how are you feeling? Because you realize how shitty you feel through that process, right? Having gone through surgery and knowing that I couldn't eat properly for a while and I couldn't hold things down. And like, I'm going to ask people different questions. And sometimes life teaches you how to be more empathetic in that, in those conversations. You bring up a great point because, you know, I think we have to learn to give ourselves grace and others. We need to learn how to be able to say, like, in this moment, let me really listen to what's needed and not project what's going to make me feel comfortable.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. The showing up the way that you can versus showing up the way you think that person might need to have
Right.
someone show up that day.
Yeah.
It is a challenge. It was certainly an interesting navigation for me with friends and family at that time.
Yeah, I write about that a little bit in the book. There's a chapter around community, and I was like, how do I go about this chapter in a unique way? And there were a lot of conversations around this, and people kind of recognizing in life, like you have your 911 people, people that are going to handle it a certain way. And when I went through what I went through, the person who was in my hotel room with me, and she knows this because I've told her, I mean, she's a no nonsense. And I remember when I was on the floor in the fetal position in excruciating pain. Her sentence was, I'm not going to hug you. I'm not a touchy-feely person, but I'm going to take you to the ER. And I was like, great, because your hugs will be nothing for me right now. And, you know, and so sometimes it's just that. But, you know, in some of the pieces you've been sharing of late, you know, just again, being so generous, sharing what you've learned to others, there are also things that you talked about that you would have maybe done differently in terms of kind of not putting as much pressure on yourself in terms of work and success in those moments. And, you know, is there anything there that you could share about what you've learned and what you think would be helpful for others?
It certainly took me some time to feel ready to talk about this experience. I part of me I certainly I wish I'd been able to feel like I could share more openly earlier on. I didn't feel like I had the emotional space. And I don't know that I'd got to that point where I had any of those lessons learned. And I think maybe because I hadn't got there, I didn't feel comfortable sharing. I mean, I think the one huge takeaway is that there isn't, sometimes there doesn't have to be an immediate learning, at least when you're in
For
it.
sure.
You can
Yeah.
take that time to, let yourself get
Process.
through the, yeah, let yourself get through the trauma, so to speak.
Yeah.
I know that's an
Yeah.
overused term these days. Yeah, and then I do think that sharing is a beautiful vulnerability, and I have seen amazing sort of people come and open up to me since being more
I'm
vulnerable.
sure.
Even a friend only last month came to me and said that she saw my article. She'd noted, some similar symptoms for her husband and insisted that he get a colonoscopy. And they found, 5 to 10 precancerous polyps, all of which were removed, which had it been 5 or 10 more years, they could have been really serious.
Yeah.
The doctor said to her, you just saved his life. And getting that
That's
note
amazing.
her to to me saying, you're the reason I sent him in, was that makes it all worth it. And so I
Yeah.
say, in the looking back in the rearview mirror, had I been able to share earlier, maybe I could have supported some more people. That being said, I was still very much in the processing of it
Yeah.
all, and
Yeah.
that was necessary for me at that time. There are certainly some other lessons. I think, I took a board meeting in the hospital bed 3 days after the first surgery, because it had taken us, 3 to 6 months to get this date, and I just didn't want to change it. I just wanted to have it. This certainly wasn't on video, and I had told them that I was pregnant, and it was scheduled in for me to tell them that I would be taking time
Okay.
off, following, this at some point as the CEO. And I probably didn't need to do that. I probably didn't need
Yeah.
to push myself to take that board meeting.
But we do that. We do that. We put that pressure on ourselves, and there's no looking back and saying I shouldn't have. It's a choice that you made, but it's more, I feel like for me, if I look back at some of the things I couldn't let go of immediately, it's reflecting back and saying, like, why did I feel I had to? And giving myself the grace and the freedom and to know I don't have to. Like, it's okay. And it's actually strength and not weakness not to.
For sure. I think that is the most important takeaway, is that actually you have to honor where you're at, and that it's okay to not be able to do everything you were able to do before. While it doesn't feel quite as good because you're so used to, I was used to going at 100 miles an hour, and
Yeah.
I had to go back to, 50 miles an hour for that time, that recovery time. And I don't regret anything necessarily. I think I could have potentially been more open and maybe told them, not only had I just had that major surgery, but that there was potentially cancer. And
Yeah.
I waited quite some time before telling them that. It's your health, so it's your
It's your
choice.
health. It's personal, of course.
And look, it's all very transparent now, and I'm grateful for having the ability to share my story. Not everyone makes it, and that's some of the scariest part about where I've been, is that, there was a friend who went to, my brother's school in Sydney, and he was diagnosed at exactly the same time, and he's not here anymore.
Oh,
So
I'm so sorry.
I am very grateful to be
Yeah.
here, and that is
Yeah.
the main, I feel, for me, that's the main point, is like, let's share these stories so that we can ensure that people do pay attention to their body, that they do listen that little bit harder, that they do advocate for themselves when they're in the hospital and someone's telling them that they're fine. I think there's certainly things to be learned.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think there's probably lessons that you bring forward now, are there any examples you can share, any moments you've had of recent of like, back then I would have did it this way, but now this is how I'm doing it.
I think I tried to always have the policy of don't make money for assholes.
I love this policy.
But I think that there's a time when, things get tough, or you're being told that you have to scale at all costs, or grow over
Right.
here. And I think I probably took advantage of my own physical body and pushed myself to meet certain deadlines that were arbitrary, that aren't real deadlines, that were false deadlines. And I would have, done the all-nighter, and I would have taken that call on the weekend, and I would have, jumped on that plane to go to that place to ensure that meeting happened. And now I absolutely say no. In fact, last year there was a new partnership we were working on, and it was very exciting, and things that all the right strategic things that I would normally have said yes to. And there was an invitation to go to another country for a particular meeting that I just, every time I looked at the meeting, I just knew that it wasn't strategically aligned with either vision. And
Your
I
gut was talking to you.
kept calling it out to them, but it wasn't just strategic from a personal standpoint, it was strategic from the business standpoint. And I kept calling that out to the, other people at the table and saying, do we really know why we're doing this? Sort of, why is this happening? And every time I asked why, there was never good data to back it up. And so I said no. And ultimately ended that partnership for all the right reasons. And it was just a really nice validating moment of being like, actually, understanding the data has always been, a core to how I work. What is the data that backs up this decision? And if it's not there, don't do it. And that data can sometimes be that gut feeling, and on often it is. But I'm so glad that I no longer force myself to, achieve, and just, the weekend is the weekend. You're allowed to take it a bit
But
slow.
here's the thing with that. Here's the thing with that is I think we have to push through. Because if we don't, we're not achieving. But I actually think you're achieving greater success because you're putting this new filter that you probably wouldn't have in the past, right? And saying, like, I'm going to trust my gut and the data and I'm going to make the right decisions. And we think if we're busy, we're successful. But busyness isn't success, impact is success. So for me, and I listen to your story, I think that it's this amazing kind of enlightenment. Because I'm gut checking now. Like, does that need to be on my plate? Can somebody else do it? Is it going to create impact? Like, can I let it go? And then you actually achieve more.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's somewhat a New York mentality too. I think it's US-wide, but New Yorkers, we have a very particular, do act way of life, into the point where, our schedules, the calendar reflects that do attitude. And then ultimately, I don't love the word burnout because I think it's also overused, but I do think at least I've had a, very huge reality check that I can't push myself that way all the time. And I think you're right. You do end up taking that slow down to ultimately speed in the right direction, to then accelerate in the right way moving
Yeah,
forward.
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, between, your life experience and being the founder of Wearable X, you're so exposed to well-being and wellness practices. And so what are the things you do? Like, do you see that crossover from, what you know as that founder and what you've been through? What are the things you turn to when besides the business side of it and data analysis and trusting your gut, what practices do you incorporate to keep you grounded, to give yourself grace, when you need those moments of pause?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's going to look different for everybody. But for me, I've always had a sort of long and arduous journal practice. A true check-in, like how do I physically feel? How do I mentally feel? And those two pieces very much help the navigation of, okay, is this feeling right? Am I feeling in the right direction? Am I doing the right things for my body? Simple things like, and who knew that an outside walk really helps? And
Like literally, it makes the biggest difference, even if you have 5 minutes. Now that I have a dog, well, a new baby, like that morning walk for 10 to 15 minutes with him that I do now resets my whole day in a way I haven't had in so long.
it game changing. Even my one this morning, absolutely game changing. We went and sat in Elizabeth Street Garden, which is truly one of my sacred places. I would often go there sort of post chemo and just sit and try and be in nature for a minute. And so it's a very special place for me. I was so thrilled when they announced that it's not being demolished. So I, a morning walk, a bit of morning sunshine, a sit in nature if you can for, you know, a short amount of time. I do have an RDX yoga practice and a meditation practice. Mm-hmm. I confess it depends on the week if I really get it in. And the yoga, certainly when I was on vacation, I was doing regularly, and that feels really wonderful. And the meditation too. You know, sometimes on a work day, I still fall back into the old traps of, oh God, I don't have time today. Let's just keep going.
And that's going to happen. And that's where I think too, we have to give ourselves that forgiveness. It's going to happen. And I try to gut check it. I don't know if you do this. You're not going to, during the week, you might not have that hour for yoga, but maybe you'll have those 2 minutes to just stop and look out the window or walk around your office, whatever it is, just give yourself a little bit of those micro moments. So you can incorporate
even if
that
it's,
in your life.
You know, quickly doing a stretch in between calls. That is game changing.
Yeah. Well, I want to do some rapid fire because you've shared so much with us, and thank you so much for being on and for this conversation. You talked a little bit about nature and the things that you do to kind of give yourself grounding when you need it. But the first rapid fire question, what are your must reads or podcasts in terms of shaping your perspective and integrating well-being in your life?
This one is going to be a little cancer specific, but Radical Remission was one of the first books I read when going through this experience. And actually, I've had lots of friends recommend it to me since. Sorry, this is not rapid fire at all, but
that's okay.
the Radical Remission is a telling of many of the patients who were sent home to die and the ones that survive. So I both listened and read the book because I really needed that. You know, I wanted to hear those stories, those positive stories of people who defied all of the odds, and filling my head with those stories felt like the absolute must do for my morning walk. I would listen to it on my morning walk while I was still hooked up to the chemo.
Yeah, that's amazing that you had that to turn to, right, for your strength and to fuel you. Okay, you're a pro at this. So what is your favorite workout routine?
I'm definitely going to go with yoga first, Pilates second.
Okay, keeping that core strong. Mm-hmm. And then what 3 words of wisdom do you turn to when you need grounding?
I think the first one would be trust, you know, trusting yourself. And trusting, you know, where you're at that point in time, what your instincts are saying. I do think creativity is still in there. And
I love that.
That to me is, you know, whether that's the paintings that you could actually get to doing or the writing that you could get to doing during that time that was hard. I felt like it was an outlet I really needed. And love. It's cliche, but I'm so grateful for my partner who, you know, slept beside me on the most uncomfortable hospital bed mattress every night for weeks on end when I was in hospital. I really think he's the reason I'm here.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I mean, like you said in the beginning of this conversation, in these moments, you see those people who are kind of, you know, my mom always calls this to my dad, her ride or die, but like you really learn those moments. So that's really beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being on, for being so courageous and sharing and helping others and continuing to shine your light and continuing to do all you're doing with Wearable X. And I know that everybody is learning so much from following you. So thank you for taking the time. Again, everybody, this is Billie Whitehouse. She is the founder of Wearable X. If you don't follow her, you need to, because she's a brilliant mind. From those vibrating underwear to the wearable technology that you do today. Thank you so much for what you continue to bring to the world.
Thank you, Melissa. And it's such a pleasure, right? And I really believe in the purpose pivot. I think there's more to be learned and there's more to pivot.
Yes, we'll do it together. Thank you so much.